2 weeks ago, World Report gave a glimpse of the Democratic Republic of Congo. This week, we'll go below the surface. 2 weeks ago, we swabbed the wounds of the largest humanitarian disaster since World War II with poetic images from a hopeful, multidimensional artistic installation that gains power by spotlighting the leader who tells people to go out and fight the wars he has created. This, you may recall, allowed the artist to play the role of the violator, the person who destroys. The artist in this case, Kenyan Wangechi Mutu, found something horribly satisfying about being a violator. As she said, people have to clean up after you. 2 weeks ago, we glanced at the situation in Katanga province concerning refugees and internally displaced people and cited the assessment of Refugees International that the humanitarian situation is beginning to improve. However, that same organization points out that thousands of asylum seekers from all parts of the world are being denied protection and resettlement under the so-called material support provisions of the U.S. Patriot Act and the ID Act. What does this mean? Keeping in mind the similar but not identical situation described 2 weeks ago of the 119 women who were raped by soldiers of the Congolese army in Ekatur province, consider the case of the Burmese family persecuted by their country's military government. The family provided 2 days' worth of food and shelter to members of an armed group fighting the Burmese dictatorship, a brutal government opposed by the U.S. Yet because this group is armed, the U.S. says that the family has provided material assistance to, quote, a foreign terrorist organization, end quote. Or consider the example of the man in Colombia who gave in to demands for money in order to save his own life and prevent the rape of his wife. He was considered by the U.S. to have offered material support to an armed terrorist organization. Although they would have been murdered had they not paid, the payment that saved their lives now bars them from entering the U.S. as refugees. The fact is that the crisis in DRC is carrying on into a period of dramatically reduced acceptance of immigrants seeking asylum from a lethal situation in their home countries. Will Canada's inclusion of the Tamil Tigers on its list of terrorist organizations have a similar effect? This week, news comes in from the Democratic Republic of Congo about the re-recruitment of child soldiers. Veronique Aubert is an Amnesty International researcher who has just returned from North Kivu region in the east. Aubert reports that, quote, for several weeks, anti-government forces loyal to dissident General Laurent Nkuda have been recruiting children, often by force. Many others, she says, fearing abduction by Nkuda's troops, have been forced to flee their homes and families to seek protection in major towns and cities. Aubert continues, many of the children had previously been recruited by armed groups and had already passed through a formal release and family reunification program. While visiting one center caring for children released from the armed groups, Aubert says, we were appalled to learn that in 1 week alone in early March, 14 of the 782 children they had reunified with their families since July 2005 had been re-recruited by Nkuda's forces. Other centers reported similar figures, she said. End quote. This disturbing trend portends the failure of the post-conflict program known as Disarmament, Demobilization, and Reunification, or DDR. We can get an idea of what might be in the cards for DRC by looking at what has happened elsewhere. DDR programs vary from place to place depending on many factors, including the dynamics of their particular conflict, the nature of their peace process, the political will of the various parties, and numerous other factors, including external influences. President Ahmad Tejan Kaba of Sierra Leone told a conference on the subject held in Freetown last June that DDR has been at the heart of his country's transition from war to peace. Without a comprehensive DDR program, he said, the prospects for long-term stability will remain dim. All post-conflict programs, be they political, social, or economic, depend on DDR and how people judge its success. Sierra Leone's DDR program is generally regarded as having been successful, but many are not. In Colombia, for instance, paramilitaries are reported to have used the money given them for old weapons to buy new ones. Human Rights Watch concluded that the demobilization phase in Colombia only served to legitimize paramilitary power. In Afghanistan, the DDR program has collected heavy weapons and demobilized 60,000 militia. But according to the U.S. Center for Strategic and International Studies, quote, the process remains incomplete and flawed, end quote. Even though 57 leaders of private armies turned in weapons to qualify as candidates for the National Assembly elections, many former warlords rearmed their demobilized forces as local police using money from drug sales. U.S. CSIS optimistically concludes that a rule-based system has yet to take hold in Afghanistan. Incentives remain stacked in favor of the commanders, the local term for people called warlords by the Western media. U.S. CSIS finds that the lack of alternative livelihoods for demobilized soldiers means that they have little option but to pick up the gun again. The right-wing strategy page observes that giving the provincial governors enough money to militarize a lot of the tribal gunmen will either create a power the central government can use to control the tribes, or simply establish another bunch of warlords who, ultimately, control the so-called central government. So even after disarmament, the question remains of how to handle the tribal warriors. The looming DDR disaster in Congo is moderated by the International Criminal Court's first arrest of one Thomas Lubanga, a Congolese warlord accused of having recruited and conscripted youth under the age of 15 as soldiers and forced them into active combat. In February of this year, the Power and Interest News Report declared that after 1 year, the process of disarmament and demobilization is in jeopardy. A week later, Al Jazeera reported the death by starvation of six former rebel fighters who were being retrained after demobilization to serve in a unified government army. These previous enemies of the state had evidently walked large distances to reach the camp where they were to be retrained. UN officials say that conditions are dire at many of Kinshasa's army training camps. Outbreaks of disease spread rapidly among soldiers crammed into decrepit buildings without electricity or running water. Alexander Essoni, a UN spokesman in the regional capital of Lubumbashi, said, quote, our military observers confirmed that six soldiers died of hunger. It looks like the government has not been feeding these soldiers for quite some time, end quote. Al Jazeera observes that although the government does provide food at some of its two-month-long training programs, the vast majority of trainees are expected to fend for themselves. One recurrent theme in the Freetown Conference, which drew more than 100 participants from 15 African countries, was that DDR should concentrate on helping ex-combatants return to civilian life and not become overloaded with other post-conflict needs, such as rebuilding communities that were ravaged by war or reconstructing devastated agriculture. Participants felt that DDR projects should be linked with these broader activities, especially to help reintegrate ex-fighters and direct them toward productive roles, but they should be kept separate. Another recurrent theme at Freetown was that the reintegration phase should get more attention. It's more complex than the other two and confronts difficulty in attracting sufficient voluntary financing not encountered by disarmament and demobilization. Participants felt that reintegration programs should also be more gender-sensitive than they have been. A UN study of gender perspectives in DDR identifies groups of people who were directly involved with armed fighters but are not seen as soldiers. These groups, primarily women and girls, support combatants, voluntarily or by force, while not directly engaging in combat. Carrying supplies, cooking food, washing clothes, providing sexual services. They are often not a focus of DDR activities as they are not seen as security threats. The UN study observes that these groups may not be eligible for DDR programs as they tend not to have weapons to trade in. Yet their lives have also been disrupted and they too need to be reintegrated into society. Family members not directly participating in the fighting may have still been victims of violence. They may have fled their homes, had to take on new responsibilities and learn new skills, overcome harsh obstacles, and be carrying their own war horrors. These families also need support if they are to successfully receive and reintegrate ex-combatants. Failure of the DDR program, combined with rejectionist new immigration laws in traditional host countries, could leave civilians ravaged by war with no place to turn. Under these circumstances, people will look to other social structures such as clans, gangs, tribes, mercenary armies, corporations, and even international criminal cartels for sustenance and security. It's a greenhouse for terrorism. This edition of World Report has been archived in the World Report website at cjoy.net/worldreport, where you can get it either as a podcast or in raw MP3 format. To comment or suggest a story, send email to earthling@cjoy.net, attention World Report, or surface mail to Box 767, Nelson, British Columbia, Canada, V1L5R4. I'm Jim Terrell at Kootenai Co-op Radio. Thanks for listening.